Welcome to Periodical Radio, the program about magazines and journals. I'm your host, Steve Black, librarian at the College of St. Rose in Albany, New York, and author of the book Serials in Libraries, Issues and Practices. The subject of our program is American Diplomacy, an online open access journal. Open access journals have no charges to readers or libraries. They are free to all internet users. American Diplomacy is one of over 2,000 journals provided for free and linked from the Directory of Open Access Journals at doaj.org. American Diplomacy is published by American Diplomacy Publishers, a not-for-profit organization based in Chapel Hill, North Carolina. Their goal, and I quote, is to publish thoughtful articles on international issues, to support efforts to strengthen the American Foreign Service, and to promote understanding of the challenges of diplomatic life abroad through the memoirs of U.S. Foreign Service personnel and their families. Among our contributors are American diplomats, both active and retired, as well as distinguished academicians. The editors accept a broad range of content of interest to active and retired foreign affairs professionals, scholars, and the general public. Some articles are scholarly, some very personal. The research-based scholarly articles are submitted for evaluation by two or more outside readers known to be knowledgeable in the field. Evaluation by outside readers is known as peer review and is a defining characteristic of a scholarly journal. The articles in American Diplomacy are clearly written and easy to understand by a non-specialist like myself. I found it quite interesting to read perspectives of people with firsthand knowledge of events I've read about in the news or seen on TV. While the journal is targeted toward the Foreign Service community, it should be of interest to anyone who cares about foreign affairs. American Diplomacy presents an interesting case study in the organization of an online journal. Traditionally, journals are published in distinct volumes and issues, and articles have page numbers. In its first few years of publication, American Diplomacy organized content into volumes and issues in the traditional manner. Since 2005, the traditional organization was abandoned in favor of organizing in several ways: by year, geographic region, author, and department. Using multiple organization schemes is effective and provides a clear advantage over traditional print-on-paper journals. I found the journal's website to be slightly cluttered, but still easy to navigate. The site is professional but not slick. Graphics are kept simple and informative, and the black or blue text on white background is easy to read. Bold red borders and limited use of pink backgrounds give the site a consistent look. A Google Search This Site block is included on many pages. Links back to the home page and departments are consistently provided throughout the site. All content from 1996 to the present is readily accessible. My guest is retired Foreign Service officer Dr. Henry E. Maddox, editor of American Diplomacy. Dr. Maddox co-founded the journal with Ambassador T. Frank Krigler in 1996. Dr. Maddox, welcome to Periodical Radio. Can you tell me the story of how American Diplomacy began?
Well, you mentioned Ambassador Krigler's name. He and I and several other people were looking around at a time when we thought that perhaps the retired Foreign Service community in our area of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, Raleigh, Durham, could perhaps make a contribution in the understanding of foreign relations, the understanding of diplomacy and that sort of thing. Our part of North Carolina, called the Triangle, which includes University of North Carolina and Duke University and North Carolina State University, plus several other colleges, is that area has been for quite some time well blessed with retired people who have backgrounds in international affairs. Heavily represented among them are retired Foreign Service officers, such as myself and such as Ambassador Krigler. We looked around and thought about this and thought about that, how we might perhaps latch on to the burgeoning net system. One idea that was thrown out was perhaps we could respond to questions over the net. We had a sort of a stable of retired people around nearby that we could call upon for information, for interpretation, and for elaboration of foreign policy problems or questions that came up. That didn't seem really to work out for one reason, because when you're retired, you very soon get to be no longer au courant. You get to be a sort of a last year's expert and that sort of thing. And so therefore, I think perhaps it was I who suggested that we use what internet or what electronic computer information that we had, computer expertise that we had, this was 10 and a half years ago, and put out a journal. And I was familiar with, of course, print journals. And as a matter of fact, way back many years ago, I had helped put out a college journal. But journals of the normal sort have problems of production, printing, and stock, and costs of that sort of thing, and the cost of assembling and cost of stapling everything together, if that seems to be the way it has to be put together, and then distributing it all kinds of problems. But we investigated, we looked into and discussed, and Ambassador Krigler was a good bit more knowledgeable about computers than I was. And so therefore, we thought, well, perhaps we could put out a monthly journal, only it would be completely no print, no printing press, no pieces of paper, no covers, no nothing of that sort. We design it, we put the whole thing together, we get together our first issue, which was fairly slim, but nevertheless included some reasonably interesting stuff. And then through the intercession and through the support of a colleague of mine at the University of North Carolina, we were able to get access to the University of North Carolina computer system. This is for a running account, keeping an archive, and getting access to the system out there in the world. So we put it all together with the cooperation of Professor Dick Cohn, who was head of the Triangle University Security Seminar and also a history professor at UNC. Through his intercession and through his support, we got out our first issue. It was just about like getting out the first issue of a college humor magazine, except that it was completely electronic. And my cohort, my colleague of the time, Ambassador Krigler, did the webmaster work. He was fairly knowledgeable about that. We got the first issue out and then immediately started putting together, issue in quotations. Then we started putting together the material to put out another issue the following quarter. That's how we got started. The impetus came from the fact that this area of North Carolina, where I live and work and where I have lived and worked for 25, 26 years now, has a great number of retired foreign affairs people, including military, including other agencies and so forth. But the core all along has been retired foreign service officers, such as Krigler and such as myself.
Very well. You mentioned that you said the word issue sort of as well as someone can use quotation marks around a word when you're speaking an issue. And I noticed that for the first 5 years of American diplomacy, you did use volume and issue numbering, but then dropped that, and now you organize the content differently in multiple ways.
Yes, I thought it was first 4 years, but it may have been 5 years. We came to the point of realizing that we were just straitjacketing ourselves with the mental approach, my mental approach of print issues, print journals. And there was simply no reason to do that, no reason whatever to hold everything up for 3 months and then all at once change over to a new web page and call it some volume something else. We thought it would be more flexible to put the material up as it became available and take material down as we decided perhaps it had been up long enough. And it would be a continuing, ongoing process. And that's been the case since 5 or 6 years ago when we decided to do that. By that time, we had put together a board of advisors, board of governors, American Diplomacy Publishers, a North Carolina incorporated nonprofit organization with a board of directors of originally about 15, 16 people. Now it's up to about 22 people. And many of the people in the on the board are retired Foreign Service. Others are retired military, and still others remain in academia, and perhaps one or two people in business world. They set policy guidelines, not political policy, because we are apolitical in our approach to foreign affairs. Although I must say, people from time to time contribute articles that are pro-intervention, anti-intervention, one thing or another. We entertain that sort of thing. And I must say also that occasionally I write editorials that are verge toward being splenetic about one thing or another. But basically, we are apolitical. Basically, we are kept that way by the board of directors that came along and was organized by the time we'd made this changeover, and the board of directors formally authorized, formally endorsed our change from a quarterly publication to an ongoing internet operation where people, where articles go up and down and up and down and that sort of thing.
The librarian term for a website that continually updates its content is what we call an integrating resource.
Well, I'm glad to know that. Now we have a name for what we have there been doing for the past 5 or 6 years.
There you go. I have a question about it being a free online journal, Dr. Maddox. Do you think American diplomacy gets as much respect and recognition as it would if it were a regular print-on-paper journal?
I think, if not now already, I think it would within the near future, because things are changing so fast that I do believe that most people of generations younger than mine think nothing of our not being printed on paper. In fact, I think the academic generations younger than mine, say 20 years younger than I, look upon web journals as being not particularly unusual. They are, because I don't think the fact that they are free really has anything to do with it. I don't know. I'm just guessing now, though.
Mm-hmm.
We don't charge. We have, it's up there if you want to look at it.
Right.
There's no way we could, that I know of anyway, that we could plug into anybody's pocketbook anywhere along the line. We support ourselves through contributions by the board members and by relatively modest support of two private foundations. And so we have sufficient funds to cover basic out-of-pocket expenses of two or three or four of our members who are involved in turning out the journal, including myself. And we pay on an hourly basis a contract webmaster, someone who we happen to have known for, most of us on the board have known for many years, and who has been in this region with associated with North Carolina State University for many years. She takes care of the webmastering business, and I take care of the thrust of the articles and the thrust and which articles really basically we will present at what time and so forth. I have working with me a publisher who is retired Foreign Service. He and I served together in the Foreign Service 50 years ago, believe it or not, almost 50 years ago anyway. I've known him for a very long time, and he retired here without knowing anything about me being here, just because it's an attractive place to retire, here being the triangle area of North Carolina. We have two, three, or four assistant or associate editors who primarily are involved in deciding whether an over-the-transom submission is useful to us or can be used by us or not. And then if so, if they recommend it and I okay it, then often I will ask them, we'll go back through it and put it into whatever format or form that we find most useful that we rather insist upon here at American Diplomacy. We have another source. I'm getting off on another subject now. We have another source of information, a source of articles, and that is reprints. The Foreign Policy Research Institute, for example, in Chicago, I think it is, puts out really good material every once in a while, and it's just one of the several such research outfits that are themselves free that publish articles on this subject or that subject having to do with foreign affairs that we borrow from time to time with, of course, advance permission and explicit permission from the organization. And then, of course, we attribute the article to that organization or to that publication. I wandered off somewhere.
That's fine. Absolutely fine. Many of the things you mentioned addressed questions that I was going to ask, so that's perfectly all right. Most of your writers are Foreign Service officers or retired Foreign Service?
Many of them. I don't know that we've ever sat down to decide just exactly how many are Foreign Service officers. We have people who are in the foreign affairs field. One that comes to mind right away is Admiral Stansfield Turner. You remember, who was CIA director at one time. I ran into him at a conference, and I had talked with him at one time before about something else. And I asked him to write something for us, and he did very nicely. That sort of thing happens from time to time. We have academic people in this area and around and about who write for us from time to time, just over the transom, except it's not exactly a surprise anymore. We know people who write and they send things in, and usually we will use what they send in with only minimal editorializing. There is a U.S. attorney in Pennsylvania who has been writing for us for 4 or 5 years, a very interesting, in-depth studies of one sort or another about, in the historical sense, about U.S. foreign policy. I think he should have been a history professor rather than a U.S. attorney. Should have gone to graduate school in history rather than law school. That seems to be the thing that interests him most. On the other hand, we have a lot of Foreign Service people who often take only a little bit of jogging from me to turn in something that's quite interesting. My one of the members of the board is a Middle East specialist who goes back years and years and years, and he can be counted upon to grind out something about every quarter, thoughtful, interesting, in-depth article of some sort. And we are one of his principal outlets for his expressions of opinion and that sort of thing. We have people who write about the Foreign Service itself. And this is an area, incidentally, that we have found that is one of the two areas of most interest to our readers, the Foreign Service. How you get in, how it operates, what it does, how you get out, with a great deal of emphasis on how to get into the Foreign Service. That is, and when we have a whole section, as you may have noted, called Foreign Service Life. People write about the experiences that they had, the first post that they had, how they took the exam, how they got shot at somewhere or another, and that sort of thing. The other area that is of most interest is anything about the Middle East. And this is not too surprising, I suppose.
So
once again, I got wound up.
That's quite all right. One of the downsides I might think of not having a subscribed journal is you don't actually know who your readers are.
Yes, we do.
You do.
We don't know in detail, but we have tracking devices, or tracking programs of some sort. We know how many people hit us, that is, open the pages to read something or another. We know how many. And we have about 1,400 now, I think, subscribers who don't have to pay anything. They subscribe, and therefore they get a heads up from some kind of
an email alert.
Email alert, yes. A long list of email alerts, however it's done. Our publisher does that.
Mm-hmm.
And he knows where these people come from and where they're located by their email addresses. Other than that, yes, you're quite right, though. We don't know in detail who comes floating in over the transom and opens up an article, reads it, and then goes away.
Do you have any
way of knowing that?
Do you have a sense of whether folks from other nations, not the United States, read your publication for insight into our Foreign Service?
We do know that. We don't know in precise detail, but we have about 50 or 60 subscribers from overseas, and they come from everywhere you can think of, from Russia on down, the Middle East and East Africa, and let's see, I think he wrote down for me some, let's see if I can find it, Afghanistan, China, Russia. Those are the only three he gave me, but there are about 50 different countries. We found out one time that, I don't know how it was done exactly, that one of our subscribers was the Russian embassy in Pakistan or somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why the Russian embassy was, well, I guess it was really obvious why they might be interested in some even informal statements of American foreign policy.
Do you have to be concerned about any classified information being revealed?
No, because we don't have access to nor any inclination to write anything that's classified.
I see.
All of us are retired. We rarely do we publish anything I shouldn't say all of us. Most of us are retired. Rarely do we publish anything from a Foreign Service officer on active duty or a military officer on active duty. In those cases, it might be that they would slip up and tell us and reveal something or other, but I find it very unlikely. People who have access to classified information are rather careful with it. They certainly wouldn't just blather it out to American Diplomacy, an unclassified, perfectly open electronic journal available to everybody in the world.
I understand. Dr. Maddox, what have you enjoyed most about being the editor of American Diplomacy?
It gives, it permits me to stay in touch with the those who are most concerned and most thinking and most active in the Foreign Service community. And I say it, Foreign Service community in a sort of broad aspect, because several members of the board are former military officers, former academics. Some are retired academics, some are active academics. It gives me a chance to stay in touch with waves of intellectual thought that go beyond reading the editorial pages of the local newspapers every day, or even reading the Economist or whatever. I get to involve myself in discussions with people who have submitted articles, and if they're good, I get in touch with them in that regard. If it's not so good, or if it's skimpy, I get in touch with them, or I ask one of our assistant editors to get in touch with them, and we discuss back and forth and see whether we can improve it, or see whether we can go to press with it, in a sense, right away if it's a good article. These editorial assistant editors, associate editors that I mentioned, all invariably are members of the board. If anyone can be charged with that kind of responsibility, pass on a given article or turn a given article down, they have the right to be, to the prestige of being on the board. Board doesn't get paid anything, but and
they not only are not paid, they actually contribute for the.
That's right, they contribute, and then we have board meetings once a quarter, and everybody buys his own lunch.
So it's not a high budget operation.
No.
Do you have any? I'm curious about this. Have you ever sat down and thought how much it would cost if everyone involved with your journal was paid the market rate for their labor?
I have never even thought about approaching that question. No, we have a publisher, who I mentioned earlier, is also the treasurer, which is an elected position. And I was once a treasurer a long time ago, as well as being vice president of the board and acting president of the board. And so I finally got rid of the treasurer business. But when I was a treasurer, it wasn't a very onerous job because we didn't have any money. But now we have reasonably substantial income, and so therefore we can cover most of our literally out-of-pocket expenses, plus the website, the webmaster expenses. But I've never thought about all these various and sundry other people. It would be really something. I'll raise that with the treasurer next time I see him, but he will probably throw up his hands.
I bring it up simply because within the librarian community, there's a great deal of discussion nowadays about what we call open access journals, like American Diplomacy, that are free available on the web to anyone with an internet connection. And the debate is whether in the long term, whether these types of journals are really sustainable. In other words, if you look 10, 20, 30 years out for a journal, whether relying on volunteer labor is sufficient or not. That's the debate within the librarian community. And obviously your journal is an example of running on dedicated individuals who volunteer their time and energy.
Yes, and I don't know how long that would be sustainable, but I don't see any change in the near future. I don't see any switch over to people dropping out because they weren't being paid or anything of that sort. Most of the people, it's a specialized kind of community where I live in north central North Carolina, around all these big universities. There's a specialized kind of community in that there's an unusual number of retired Foreign Service officers, virtually all of them seniors, many senior officers, all of them, I guess. and quite a few of them retired ambassadors. They are interested in the process of foreign relations, and they are interested in the practice of foreign relations, and they retain that interest, not even though they are retired. Retirement doesn't make all that much difference. I am lucky. I am favored. How long? I've been the editor of this thing for a little over 10 years now, and I don't know how much longer I will wish to stay, but if I decide to step down, or if I am asked to step down for whatever reason, there will be somebody here in this community who will be willing and able to take over.
That's excellent.
If I were, let's say, camped, I don't want to cast aspersions on any particular area, but if I had retired in South Mississippi, where I grew up and first went off to school and that sort of thing, I would be in trouble trying to run this kind of operation. Mm. People don't retire in South Mississippi.
Mm. Well, Dr. Maddox, I'm afraid our time is up. We do limit the show to about 30 minutes to fit into our program rotation. But I thank you very much for being my guest. It's been fascinating.
My pleasure.
If you would like to read American Diplomacy, it is available for free to anyone with a web connection. The URL is www.unc.edu/DEPTS/diplomat. Thank you for listening to this installment of Periodical Radio. I'm your host, Steve Black.